This is a recording of the speaker participation meeting with Bobby J. from Salinas, taped at the first California Mid-State Regional Convention for NA in Fresno, California, on Friday, June 29, 1990. In observance with the 11th tradition stating anonymity at the public level, please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all NA speakers.
Thank you, Aaron. Right now, I'd like to introduce our speaker, which is Bobby J. from Salinas.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bobby. I'm an addict.
Hi, Bobby.
And I'm real grateful to be here. Matter of fact, I'm real grateful to be anywhere, especially here. Fresno holds a lot of memories in my heart because I used to live here. I started shooting heroin in Fresno, and that's not one of the memories that I hold dear in my heart, but I did a lot of crazy things in Fresno. I had a lot of good times in Fresno. I lived here from 1972 to 1977, and the only reason I left was because I was in a wreck. I got into an automobile accident and pronounced dead on the scene, and I got hurt real bad, and I didn't have no place to recuperate here, so I had to go back from where I was from, and that was Hollister, and continued my using there when I recuperated, and continued to do all the crazy shit that I used to do before, and a lot more. Briefly, to start with, I want to tell you a little bit about myself and what I used to do and why I'm here. I started using drugs at the age of 12 and stopped when I was 32. And I don't like to talk too much about how it was, because I think we all know how it was. I don't think there's anybody here that doesn't know how to get loaded. I mean, we all know how to get loaded. But what I will tell you was that I started with the gateway drugs like everybody else, and that's tobacco and marijuana, and then started with alcohol, and went on to LSD, and my first psychedelic was STP, and I went nuts, but I loved it. And I loved anything that made Bobby not feel what Bobby was feeling at the time. And it got to the point where that was anything, whether it was alcohol or drugs, it didn't matter. Whatever was put in front of me, that's what I used. The age of 19, I kicked my first habit, and that was speed. I was eating over 100 whites a day, and I was going nuts. Couldn't sleep for days. And the way I would come down was I would eat reds, and then I'd crash for a day or two, and then I'd open my mouth and pop some more whites in there, and went off again. And I quit that, and the way I quit the whites was I got strung out on reds. And That's what led me into the part of the story where I ended up coming to Fresno. I was living with a girl, and I came home one night, read it out, and I used to drink tequila, and I used to eat reds and drink tequila. So this is the way I used to party back in Hollister, and I hung around with guys that used to party with me just like that. I would eat maybe four or five, maybe six hits of Orange Sunshine, and I'd wait about 20 minutes, and I'd eat about 10, 12 reds while I was drinking tequila and sitting there rolling joints. And I rolled a big stack of joints because I knew that I wasn't going to go too far after everything had hit me. And that's the way it was. And that's the way I partied. I partied until it was gone. I don't know anything at all about social using or social drinking. That concept is, you know, still baffles me. I can't see people having one glass of wine with dinner. I mean, you know, just leave the bottle for me. That's all what I used to do. Anyway, I came home one night in a blackout, and I tried beating this girl up. And needless to say, she got scared, and she split. And, I scared her so bad, she moved to Fresno. And this is where her mother was living. And she came over here, and finally I got a hold of her, and we got back together under the one condition. And that one condition was that I didn't eat any more reds. Quit. I had to make her a promise that I wouldn't eat any more reds. And I said, okay. I love this woman, and I loved her very much, and I wanted to make a life with her. And I think I loved her because, you know, she didn't give me any shit. Nobody ever told me. When people told me what I should be doing, what I shouldn't be doing, we got in a conflict every time, you know. And it didn't matter who it was. And we ended up moving to Fresno, and I quit eating the reds, but I started drinking real heavy. and I would drink and I would smoke weed. But the way I drank, you know, I had to do something to substitute for the drug that I wasn't using at that time in my using history. And so what I did was I started drinking real heavy. I moved to Fresno and was introduced to my mother-in-law. The very first time we met, we drank a case and a half of beer and 7 bottles of cold duck, and that was my introduction to her. And we continued drinking for the next 3 or 4 years, 5 years maybe. No, about 4 years, I guess. We ended up getting married. We lived together for quite a while, and then we ended up getting married, and the marriage ended 13 months later because of my drinking. Wouldn't come home at night, and I'd come home and get crazy. I had a real violent temper, and she decided she couldn't take it anymore, so she decided that we're gonna call it quits. And when she left, she took the only reason that I had not to use drugs, and that's when I started shooting heroin. And if you're from Fresno, maybe you'll remember some of these names, like the Copa. I used to bartend at the Copa Bar. When I moved to Fresno, I came from a real small town where there wasn't very much discrimination or segregation. When I moved to Fresno, I found out that there was white bars, brown bars, and black bars. And if you're brown, you better hang out in brown bars and not go to white bars or black bars, you know, unless you're crazy enough and wanted to go and have some fun, like start fights and shit. And I used to do that too. But I started shooting heroin, and that progressed to where I got strung out, lost my job. The landlord got evicted me. The PG&E turned off all the power. You know, you don't pay your bills, and they do that kind of shit to you. And so I went on for a couple of years using heroin until I got into that wreck. And after I recuperated from that wreck, I moved back to Hollister. And when I was able to walk again, I walked straight to the Connections house and started shooting again. And that went on for a little while until I found cocaine, and then I fell in love with cocaine, and I shot cocaine for the next 6 years until I came into this program. And when I got here, I was a real sick puppy. When I got here, I think the best way that I can describe the way I was when I got to this program was I was in the third stage of seasickness. And if you don't know what the third stage of seasickness is, I'll explain it to you. The first stage is when you're out in a boat and you start getting sick and you start heaving over the side and you think you're going to die. The second stage is you get a little sicker and you want to die. And the third stage is you get even sicker and you become so fearful and so afraid and scared that you're not going to die. And that's the way it was when I got to this program. I came to this program because I want a change in my life. And for 20 years, all I knew how to do was get loaded to make the feelings that I had inside of me go away. And that quit working. The drugs quit working. The alcohol quit working. Everything I did to get out of me quit working. And it started to hurt real bad. And after I'd shoot up all that dope, it hurt even worse. It got to the point where it hurt even worse after I got loaded. And at the last 6 years of my using, I got to the point where I was one of those dope fiends that would break into other people's houses and steal their shit, you know, and take it to the connection. And I always told myself, because when I was a youngster, I was about 17, 18, I used to snort heroin, but I never fixed it because I didn't want to turn into one of those people. And I used to hang out with those type of people. And I used to sell heroin, and these people would bring me TVs and stereos and shit, you know. And I told myself, I'm never, ever going to get that bad, you know. And so I never wanted to put needles in my arms back then. And I waited until I was about 24 or 25 before I started shooting dope. Actually, 24, I guess. But I got to that point real quick, you know, because Connections, they want money. You know, they want something up front for their dope. And I burned too many of them, so they quit fronting me. And I got to the point where nobody wanted me around anymore. I'd go to a friend's house, and if he was going to go to the bathroom, he'd leave the kids in the room with me so to make sure that I wasn't going to steal nothing from them. And it got real lonely. It got real, real lonely and real scary. And I had this one friend who we used to shoot dope together, and we used to live together as kids. And I mean, he was a homeboy who was still stuck by me, and he would front me dope, you know, maybe a pound or whatever, to go and make some money, and so I could have some money in my pocket, and I'd fuck it all off. You know, I wouldn't pay him, you know, and I'd put it all in my arm. And one night I went over to his house. And you know, for the last 5 years, I think I was trying to stop. My own friends that I was shooting dope with were telling me, "Bob, you got a problem, and you better go do something about it." You know, as they were dishing out more cocaine, you know, and putting another bottle of Jack Daniels in front of me, and I tell them, "No, I don't got a problem. I can quit anytime I want. I don't got a problem." So, I went down to this guy's house, and I was trying to, like I said, I was trying to quit, and I'd go maybe 3 days. And all I'd have to do is see a Coke commercial or hear somebody say the word Coke, and it'd ring a bell in my head, and I was off. People would call me up and say, "Can you score for me?" And boom, I was off, you know. I mean, even if it was just a little quarter, I'd go and score, and I'd take it, and before I left the connection, I'd cut it in half and then give it to them, and then when they took me home, I'd ask them to kick down a little bit, you know. And that's how bad I had gotten. And I went down this guy's house, and I had an outfit in my sock, and I knew that he was going to turn me on a little bit. And there was cops all over the place, and that never stopped me before. You know, I hadn't done nothing wrong, so I went through the gate and went into his house. And even though the police were there, they let me walk in. They knew who I was. I walked in there, and he had a shootout with his brother. These are the kind of people I hung around with. I mean, him and his brother got pissed off at each other, and the best thing they can do is shoot at each other. And one of the bullets strayed and went through a house, this old lady's house across the street, and she called the police, and they were standing there while they went and got a search warrant. And he had all kinds of dope. He had guns and everything. And what he did was he told me he wanted me to hold something for him. He wanted me to hide something from him. For him, and I knew right away what he was going to do. And he gave me an ounce of coke and an ounce of cocaine. I mean, a crank. And so, I didn't like crank, but it took me about 8 hours to hide all that ounce of cocaine right in my arm. And I did. Me and a couple other people. And that started a lot of shit, because these people that were helping me were in the program. And they had, one of them was my girlfriend, and the other one was a friend of ours. And they helped me hide it, and they helped me fix this whole ounce of cocaine. And the next morning when it was gone, I realized what I had done, and I said, "Well, I'm going to have to go face this guy." You know, so I decided to go back, and I expected him to try to hit me at least. You know, I had that one coming. I was going to let him hit me once. You know, maybe he even tried to take a bat to me, because I was bigger than him, and I knew he couldn't kick my ass. And I was running all this shit in my head. You know, and if worse came to worse, you know, he'd probably pull a shotgun out on me and try to shoot me. But I thought, you know, I could take it away from him and wouldn't worry too much about it. So I was playing all this shit in my head before I got there, right? And I got inside, and I told him what I did, and he looked at me straight in the eye, and did the thing that hurt me the worst. He told me, "Get out of my house." And that really hurt. And I did. I left, and like I said, that was my last friend, you know, somebody that I could really depend on. And all my life, as growing up as a kid, I was a real, real sensitive kid, and I did a lot of crying. And I had a tough Mexican father who told his kids that, you know, especially us, his sons, that they weren't supposed to cry. And I had an older brother that loved beating me up just for GP. You know, and he did. On a daily basis, he would beat me up. And the way I would make him stop hitting me was I'd start crying. He'd feel sorry for me, and he'd quit. But then my father would take over because one of his sons was crying. And I used to hear my father say, "I'm going to hit the first one that cried." And then my brother would make it a point to make me cry. And, you know, I got tired of that shit one day, and I said, you know, I'm never going to cry again for another human being, especially after my father slapped my face and called me a baby. And I decided I was going to get tough, right? And I did. I didn't cry for nobody, for nothing. But after this guy had told me to leave his house, I went home, and all through all them years, all these things had been happening to me. It like little bombs were going off in, were being deposited inside of me, you know. And that thing was what ignited all those little bombs. Because what happened was I had an emotional breakdown, and I went home and I sat and I cried for about 2 days without stopping. And I would stop long enough to go out and buy me a bottle of whiskey or steal a bottle of whiskey or drink my dad's whiskey or whatever and go back into my room. And I would sit there and cry, just like a little baby, you know, with the snots and everything. And I knew I wanted to stop, and I didn't know how. I really did not know how to stop. I thought about suicide, and I even tried it. You know, I pulled out a gun and stuck it to my head and tried to blow my brains out. That didn't work because I couldn't pull the trigger. And so what I did was I went to church and started praying. And I believe today that God heard my words. When I dropped that gun, I uttered three words that ultimately changed the course of my life. And those three words were, God help me. And I didn't realize it at that time, not after I had been in the program for years and had some clean time and started doing more and more inventories. I realized that was the turning point in my life. And, you know, I stood at the crossroads there. And I decided to ask God for help, because for 20 years before that I was born and raised a Catholic, went to catechism, you know, I had all the sacraments. I even had my last rites because I had been pronounced dead once. But I didn't believe in this God. Well, let me clarify that. I believed that there was a God, but I didn't know what I was supposed to do with this God. Catechism, they taught me that this God was so almighty and so powerful that he can wipe me off the face of the earth for anything, at any time, I mean, just like that. And I became real fearful of this God. I mean, you know, in catechism, because I was talking to the guy next to me or the girl next to me, the nuns would throw erasers at me and hit me on the head with spoons and rulers and yell at me and tell me that I was going to go to hell because I'm a sinner and I'm going to burn in hell. And I'm 8 years old, 9 years old, wondering what the fuck I did that was so bad that this God is going to punish me for eternity. And I got real fearful. I mean, my mother used to buy us crucifixes that glowed in the dark and hang them up in our bedroom. And I wake up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom or something, and I'd be afraid to get out of the covers because there he was. So here I am crying like a little baby. And all these years I had said that there was no God. I didn't believe in God. And I don't know about anybody else, but I was a real good liar in all through my life. And if I told you a straight up lie, like I tell you a lie and you didn't believe me, the more I would try to believe that lie. And the more I try to make you believe it, the more I believed it, to where I started living these lies. And that's what I did with God. I used to say, there is no God. God is dead. I don't want to hear about God. So when I decided that this was my last chance, after I dropped the gun out of my hand, this was my last chance, I decided that I was going to go and ask God for help. I asked my mother for the keys to her car so I can go to church, and she looked at me, she saw that I was crying, and she says, "What's the matter, son? Who died?" And I remember distinctly looking at her right in the eyes, and I said, "I did." And without hesitation, she gave me the keys to her car, and I went to this church, and I sat and prayed for about 2.5 hours. I stopped crying. And when I left there, I felt so good, I went straight to another connection's house, lied to him, and got some more dope. But it wasn't working. And I remember 10 months prior to that, this girl that I was going out with decided to leave me because she was coming into the program, Narcotics Anonymous, and she was going to change her life. She had a brother who was in the other program. We used to call him the Big Book. And I hated this guy. You know, he was gay, and he was funny, and he was short, and I didn't like him. He called the cops on me. He nicknamed me the Resident Satan of Hollister. You know, and I kind of liked that title, you know, because you know I did a lot of crazy shit in Hollister. Anyway, I remember her saying to me one day, "If you ever want help, call me." So I decided to give her a call, and her and this other guy came and picked me up, and they took me to a meeting. Matter of fact, it was them two girls that helped me hide that ounce. They both came and picked me up, and they took me to my very first NA meeting. And I thought that I was going to know everybody in there. I thought that everybody was going to come up to me and say, "Hey, we've been waiting for you," and all that shit. And I walked in there, and there must have been about 8 people in this meeting. At that time, there was only 2 meetings, 1 meeting in Hollister. It was on a Wednesday night. It was at the American Legion, this little room on the side. And I walked in, and I was scared. I was sick. I hadn't given up the booze. I didn't think I had a problem with booze. I just wanted to quit putting needles in my arms. So I was a little high, and I was still a little sick, and I walked in there, and I had still emotional, real emotional at that time. And there was this big white dude, and I looked like an Iowa farmer, football player, and he was a secretary, and he welcomed me, and I sat down along the wall. Everybody was around the table, and I went and sat against the wall by myself. And this guy comes over and brought me half a cup of coffee. And I didn't get a resentment about that until a year later about that half a cup of coffee. But he brought me a half a cup of coffee, and I didn't drink coffee at the time, and I took it. And I wanted to tell him everything that was going on with me so he could fix me right there. What I thought that first meeting was going to do for me, that I was going to be able to find out what I needed to do so I can go home and live happily ever after. And I wouldn't have to put no more needles in my arms. And he told me just... And when I opened my mouth to tell him this, all I could do was cry. And I felt real stupid and embarrassed because I was crying in front of these people, but I couldn't help it. I couldn't stop crying. And he patted me on the back and he said, just keep coming back, sit there and listen. And I didn't hear a damn thing. There's only two things that I remember out of that first NA meeting. And there was this woman complaining about her car breaking down on her, and another guy was complaining about his dog shitting in his shoe. And I didn't understand what that had to do with stopping putting needles in my arms. So after the meeting, they took me home and I polished off my fifth of Jack Daniels that I had there and went to sleep. The next day they picked me up for another meeting. And they kept telling me that you're not supposed to even drink in this program. And I said, well, I don't have a problem with alcohol. I just want to quit putting needles in my arms, that's all. And they say, well, alcohol is the oldest known drug. And she kept telling me this. Alcohol is the oldest known drug. I don't give a shit what you say. I don't have a problem with alcohol. But I forget about all the times I went to jail behind alcohol and, you know, the three drunk drivings and fighting with police officers in bars and, you know, all that other shit and getting beat up because I was drunk. But I went to meetings for about 4 weeks and after the meeting, I'd go and get drunk, and then I'd be at the Connections House. And I was the type of dopey who, at the end, would come up with anything, you know, pennies and quarters, and just go and get a 10-second bag, you know, because that's what it was, you know. And I'd be 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning throwing pebbles up at this guy's window to wake him up. And he opened the window and said, oh, it's you. And I said, come on down. So he'd come down and open the door and let me in, and he'd be holding that bag in his hand. And he'd be cussing me out, calling me a dog and an animal and an asshole. And sometimes this old lady would get up and she'd cuss me out too. But then I'd give him the money and he'd give me that bag. And I'd walk out of there thinking that I got over. Laughing at him, thinking that I got over. And, you know, within 5 minutes, I was back. You know, I wanted to go back. So one night I remember, it was about... I guess I was going to meetings for about 4 weeks. I decided, I was over at this guy's house. He was drunk enough to let me come by, and he was one of the connections in town who happened to be my compadre. And he kind of felt sorry for me, saw me hanging out drinking beer at a bar one night, so he said, come on over, you know, we'll go do a couple of lines. But he would dish out my line, and I'd put it in a spoon and go into the bathroom, and he'd snort his, you know, and I'd come back And that's what we did all night. We drank all night long. About 5 o'clock in the morning, because we grew up together as kids. And we were reminiscing, and we started getting we started sobbing and crying and talking about old times, you know, and shit like that. And I told him about that time that I tried to commit suicide. And his mother... God bless her. I went to her funeral this year. She died with 21 years of sobriety. But he told me, he said, why don't you start going back to the meetings? It worked for my mother, you know. And I said, I don't know. You know, I don't know what to do. I really don't know what to do. So the next day, and I was feeling real sorry for myself. I was hungover real bad. I was sick. And I was suffering, and I didn't want to go to a meeting. I didn't want to get loaded. I didn't want to stay home. You know, I was suffering from the didn't wants, and I didn't know what I wanted. And I decided to go to a meeting. said, fuck it, what's, you know, why stop now? I don't know what was going on in my mind. I really don't know what was going on in my mind, but I knew that I went to this meeting. And these people had seen me coming in and out for 4 weeks now, you know, on a pretty regular basis, and sometimes I'd leave before the Lord's Prayer. I wouldn't talk to nobody, and nobody came up and talked to me. You know, I don't know why. I had real long hair, and I had this big Fu Manchu. I wore an big army jacket, carried a gun, and wore Levi's and boots, and wondered why nobody would come up and talk to me. You know? But they knew me. They knew who I was. You know? And I came in late, as usual. I sat in the way in the back in my favorite spot, right next to the coffee pot. And the speaker got through talking when I walked in. And he says, I think I want to hear from Bobby. And the room went quiet. I mean, and it was a carpet, but you could hear a pin drop, you know. But and everybody was looking at me, and this is the first time anybody had ever asked me to speak in a meeting. And I looked at everybody. I just glanced around the room, and I looked at everybody, and I said, you know, I don't want to be here. I don't like you people. I think you're all a bunch of assholes, and I want you all to leave me alone. And somebody said, keep coming back. And then this guy that I didn't like, it was happened to be my ex-girlfriend's brother, came walking up to me, and he looked at me and he said, Bobby, I think we need to talk. You want to talk to me after the meeting? Now, this is the guy that I swore that if I ever got him alone, I was going to break him in half, you know. I didn't like him. So I put the dirtiest look that I can put on my face, you know, one of them barroom brawl looks, looked him right in the eye, and the word yes came out of my mouth. And I just, and I said, I don't know how that happened. You know, I know today that, you know, God was on my side. But what happened was that we went back to the fellowship hall. It used to be this old Victorian house on the corner of 4th Street and West Street there in Hollister, right next to the jail, one of my favorite hangouts. But we went back and we put on a pot of coffee and we sat in the kitchen, and there was this table like this, and we sat across from it, from each other. And he started asking me these questions. And he was asking me questions like he knew me. You know, asked me about these feelings and some of the things that I had done in my life and how you know, what was going on. And for some reason, I couldn't lie to this guy. And I was saying yes, and I started crying. And he reached across and he grabbed my hands and he said, pray with me. And he started with the Lord's Prayer, and I had forgotten the words. Seriously, I'd forgotten all the words to prayers. And I used to say them faithfully every night as a kid growing up. You know, my mother would make sure that you had to say your prayers before you went to bed. And he held my hands, and we started praying, and I started getting this feeling, and it started at the top of my head. And by the time, it was a real funny feeling, and I hadn't taken anything that day. But I was still getting this, there was like a rush. And it worked down to my shoulders, and by the time it got to my shoulders, I got real scared. And I looked across at him, and his eyes were this big. And I knew that he knew what was going on, but I didn't. And I got even scareder. And you know, I'm a good dope fiend. When I get scared, the first thing that comes into my mind is run. And I wanted to run. He grabbed my hands, and he said, don't run. And he knew what was going on. He said, that's the Holy Spirit. And that scared me even worse. But the feeling continued, and it went all the way down to my toes. And I never felt anything like that. Never in my life. No drug had ever done that to me. And he says, let's get on our knees and pray. And we did. We got on our knees and knelt in front of each other, and we held hands and we prayed. And we stood there for about 3 hours talking. And that was January the 28th, 1984, and I haven't had to put any more needles in my arm. I'm a patient. And I started going to meetings, and things changed. My attitude changed. My feelings started to change. And I started listening to people. And people were telling me things like, don't leave before the miracle. And I said, I already got the miracle. And they said, no, don't leave before the miracle. And then they were saying things like, allow us to love you until you can love yourself. And that scared me. Because to me, I had to pay for your love. That's the way it's always been all my life. I don't ever remember having my mother hold me in her arms and tell me that she loved me, or my father. They showed their love by telling me, get out, you know, shut up, you know, I'll give you something to cry about. You know, that's the way that's what love was to me. So these people, and I thought they wanted something. And I started going to meetings with a different attitude. And the attitude was that, the attitude of hope. There was something here that these people had to offer me, but I don't know what it is yet. I'm a good dope fiend. I'm going to stick around long enough to find out. You know what? I'm going to give it a year just to show these people that I can do it. I'm going to show them motherfuckers out there that I can do it. And I picked up my first year cake. I forgot who the motherfuckers were. You know, I couldn't remember who I was doing it for. So I decided, you know, why don't I just keep on going? You know, things are getting a little better. I still hadn't had a job. I still, you know, I was still scrounging for cigarette money and gas money, and I go to my sponsor and bitch and moan about not having a job, not having any money, and, you know, why in the hell am I even here? You know, things you guys keep telling me, keep coming back, it's going to get better, and I keep asking you when, and they say, keep coming back, it's going to get better. Nobody would ever tell me when it was going to get better. And my sponsor would always tell me, by the way, I got that big white Iowa farmer as my sponsor. As I felt, I figured we had nothing at all in common. So me and him were going to get along okay, because I was going to tell him what time it was, you know. And it didn't work out that way. He showed me a lot. We became very good friends. Matter of fact, I love him very much. He's probably one of my best friends in the whole world. He saved my life many times. I used to go to him and tell him, why do I have to keep going to meetings? You know, how long do I have to go to meetings? You know, when do I get to graduate out of this? And he'd tell me, it's real simple, Bobby. You just go until you want to go. Then you never have to ask that question again. And he used to tell me all kinds of profound things. I remember I got into this analytical trip. I had to figure out everything. They tell me everything happens for a reason. So I had to try to figure out what the reason was. And I remember one day I was working with him. He was a contractor, and we were working building this duplex. And he sent me to the store to get a six-pack of sodas. And this was in San Juan. I knew a lot of people. I knew everybody in that area. And I ran into this dude I used to shoot dope with on the way into the store. And you know, he told me he's got some, and you know, it's real good, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know what, I don't fuck around no more, man. And I walked into the store. And it's, why'd that happen? You know, I'm walking around the store looking for this Coke, and I'm, why'd that happen? You know, that happened for a reason, but why? On the way out, I ran into another dude, two dudes that I used to shoot dope with, and I had to tell them, you know, I don't fuck around no more. All the way back home, I'm thinking, that means something. What does that mean? I don't know, man. It was driving me nuts, and I went back, and I had the six-pack in my hand, and I looked at him, and I said, you know what? And he saw it. I was puzzled. He says, what's the matter? I said, I just ran into two dudes I used to shoot dope with, man. What does that mean? And he goes, oh, shit. He pulls the six-pack out of my arms. He says, sit down, I'm going to tell you. So I sat down. I said, okay, here it comes. He goes, what that means is that you just ran into two guys you shoot dope with. And he walked away. And I kind of... You know, I think I started understanding a little bit that time, you know? And I realized that I have a power greater than myself that's on my side today. I choose to call him God, you know, and I really believe that there is one. I really believe that there is a God, and he's working in my life, and he loves me unconditionally. And one thing I had to learn in this program was I had to take risks. And some of the biggest risks I've had to take is sit here and talk with another dope fiend about what was going on inside of Bobby. You know? And for a long time, I ran away from that shit. And through working steps, doing inventories, making amends, I've learned that I can go through anything. I can walk through fire in this program because God's on my side. You know, every time I go through some shit, I used to call it crises. And then I changed the upgrade crisis to learning experiences, you know, and that's what they are. My whole life is a learning experience. I got a bunch of teachers here; they're all working with me. I've come a long ways. You know, I'm working. I got a job about 2.5 years ago. This job, they advertised for an ex-IV drug user, and I never ever thought that they were going to, this, my experience was going to be able to benefit me in my life, you know. And I've been there 2.5 years now, and you know, in 1988 I was nominated as Outstanding Employee of the Year, and I work for the County of Monterey. I do AIDS education. I go back into the community from where I came, and I do AIDS education. I go into the jails, and they put me right into the cell, and I get to do my rap and talk with these guys, and I help them get into programs, and I'm supportive. I'm a counselor. I do all these things. And I even tell the jailers when they can let me out, and they let me out. and that's great. I love that. My life has really changed. One of the things that I'm really, really the most grateful for is that my life did not turn out the way I planned it. You know, left to my own devices, I'll fuck everything up. You know, God's so smart, he don't let me know what's going to happen, because he knows I'll find a way to fuck it up. I'm not saying that everything is great, you know, because it's not. You know, right now, we're going through a little bit of financial difficulty, you know, because money's always been funny with me. And, it seems like when I got it, there's a purpose for this money, and that's to spend it, you know. Retail therapy doesn't work real good. But we're learning. A little over a year ago, when I started working for the county, I met a girl, and we started seeing each other, and we got attracted to one another, and one thing led to another, and we're married. You know, I've been married for over a year now. She's a normie. You know, she's never seen me drunk or loaded or under the influence. She's never seen me with one of my temper tantrums, putting my fist through walls and shit. You know, because I've learned how to deal with that stuff that used to bother me inside. There's no tornado inside me anymore. You know, every once in a while there's a little whirlwind. But because of this program, you know, this program, Narcotics Anonymous, and the steps and the people and the love that's in these rooms have helped me settle that tornado down. You know, it blows every once in a while. Some hot wind comes out, hot air, but it's got to. You know, I ventilate it. One of the other miracles is that other people are asking me to be their sponsor. You know, I'm giving away what was actually given to me, free, and I give it back. And that's how I get to stick around. I remember one day, the topic used to turn to Bobby a lot, you know, in meetings, because I'd be in the back slamming my fist on the table asking these people why. Why this? Why that? You know. And I remember one night I was asking them, why do I have to keep coming to these meetings? I ain't using no more, I ain't drinking no more, you know, but I got this meeting, these meetings are my addiction. I must have had a hot 10 days in the program. You know? This woman turned around and she looked me right in the eye. You know, those things weren't real notorious for looking at each other in the eye, you know. But she looked me right in the eye and she told me, because we need you, Bobby. You know? And I said, that's when I finally understood the meaning of that term. We cannot give away, we cannot keep what we have unless we give it away. And when I first heard that, you know, I couldn't understand it because I'm a dope fiend from the street. And we don't keep our dope if we give it away. I mean, where are you guys coming from? But I understand now. I understand that the love that was so freely given to me, you know, is what I get to give away. The only thing that I can give away, like my sponsor told me, is what I know. Because I asked him, one day, I said, what do I say in meetings? When people call me, what do I say? Because all these people are talking all this good stuff. And, you know, one of my dreams is to be a speaker, you know. And he says, well, the first thing you do is you don't talk about what you know, because you don't know nothing. All you know how to do is make yourself and other people miserable. That's all you know how to do. But if you talk, when you talk, you talk about what's going on in here, in your gut, about what's going on in your feet with your feelings. You can never go wrong. Okay, I'm getting a high sign over here. I better shut up. But one of the things, like I said, there is hope in these rooms. If you're new, please keep coming back. I always end my chair with a story, and it's a real simple story. And if you've heard it before, well, you're going to hear it again. And the story goes like this. This is what NA is to me. When I first heard this story, I cried. And what this story is about a man who dies and goes to heaven, and he's met at the pearly gates by St. Peter. And St. Peter tells him, and before you come into heaven, you have to pass this little test. So he says, okay, I'm game. So he walks him over to this door, and he opens this door, and he looks inside, and there's about 300 people in there, men, women, and children. And they're sitting around this table with a feast fit for a king. I mean, there's food all over the place. And nobody's eating the food, and a lot of people are, they're all real sad. Some of them are sobbing, and some of them are crying. And the problem was they had real long necks and real short arms, and they couldn't eat this food. They couldn't feed themselves. So St. Peter asked this man, what's this room? He says, that's hell. Without hesitation, he said, that's hell. So he took him to another room. He opened the door, and laughter almost knocked him down. There's kids running around with drumsticks and apples and oranges in their hands playing. And there was people sitting at these tables, and they were eating all this food. Because the people in this room were exactly like the people in the first room. They had long necks and real short arms. And St. Peter asked this man, what's this room? The man, without hesitation, says, that's an anamity. St. Peter says, well, why do you say that this is an anamity and the other one is hell? They're both full of the same exact type of people. And he says, the difference is in this room here, everybody's feeding each other. And I want to thank you.
Again, give thanks to Bobby J. from Salinas. Let's give him another hand. And as you can tell, I'm definitely nervous. This is also a speaker participating meeting. Would anyone have a desire to come up before I start calling on people? How about that lady in the peach with a little necklace?
I'm Susan, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Susan.
I didn't come here to talk. I came here to listen to all this good stuff. Feelings like right now would be scared, I guess. I get real nervous when I have to come up and talk in front of people that I don't know. And I've been scared for a while. I was real active in the fellowship and took another job that... they got me off in the side country and working different hours and not going to meetings and thinking that I could sit at home and do my meditation and make some phone calls and hang on to my program, and things didn't work real well. I didn't use, and I was grateful for that, but I knew that there wasn't any such thing as recovery in my life anymore because... probably the first clue to that was the first month my phone got cut off. And it wasn't that I didn't have the money to do it. It was just that my life had gotten so disorganized, nothing was functioning anymore. I looked okay on the outside, but the inside was real crazy. And the next clue that I might want to be doing something about this was the second month my phone got cut off. Second month in a row. And when I called to get it paid back, and the phone company made it real easy. See, it's all their fault because they made it real easy to get cut off and turned back on. All you had to do is go in before 5:30, pay the money, and call 611 at 5 o'clock. And, you know, within 3 or 4 hours, you had a phone again. And when I knew that I really needed to get back into meetings and I needed to get back in touch with a sponsor and I needed to really get serious about doing a program, was the third month my phone got cut off. The second month this happened, that when I called 611 and said I need a phone again, the man said, you sound like a really nice lady. You don't sound like someone that doesn't pay their bills. And I said, yeah, I'm a nice lady, but things are kind of crazy and I'm not taking care of business right now. And I guess when I get tired of this shit, I'll, you know, do something about it. And I didn't get the same guy the third month I called. And... by then, it had been necessary for me to have a phone here in Fresno, and I'd had that phone for a month. And guess what happened to the phone in Fresno? Within a week of the time the one at home got cut off, the one in Fresno got cut off. There's something about phones, I guess. And I decided that was it. I got myself back into meetings, and I got myself in touch with a sponsor, and I make... phone calls, I make at least one phone call every day, and I continue to do my reading. You know, and I'm really grateful that you people are here for me to come back to. that's hard for me, because I've never had anybody in my whole life to come back to. Thank you for being there. coming back.
Is anyone ready for the next step, or do I have to also call somebody? Okay.
You nominated. Give him as a name.
My name is Andrew, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Andrew.
And I'm sober, only by the grace of God today, and I'm glad to be here. This is my first NA convention away from home. I'm from Los Angeles, and I'm glad to be here. I'm a little nervous right now, you see, but it's all right, you know. What's going on with me right now is, I feel real good today, you know. A lot of things been going down in my life in the last 4 months, you know, this year, but, you know, it's been to the point where I ain't been able, you know, to have to drink about it, and, or use or anything, you know. I've been in the program. I come here in the program on May the 6th, 84, and I haven't found it necessary to go back out. And I don't drink today, you know, and I don't use today, and I don't have to, because you people, you know, you taught me that. You know, you're giving me a foundation where I can, you know, keep myself going by going to a lot of meetings and, doing, you know, just taking a few suggestions and doing what I'm supposed to do around here. Today I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm getting up, going to work, and living life, you know, on life's terms. I'm just doing good today, you know. I come out here with my sister and my brother-in-law, and I wasn't expecting to come to no convention. You know, they asked me at the last moment, and I took the day off, and it was my birthday holiday. But I'm really glad to be here, and I want to, you know, just hang around here, and I came here to sit down and listen, but my partner kicked me up here, and I'm gonna keep coming back. So thanks for being here.
Thank you, keep coming back. How about the lady in the black t-shirt with a skirt?
Hi, my name's Christine May. I'm an addict and an alcoholic. Hi. Fresno's a real trip for me because I used real hard and real heavy over here for a number of years. And so I left Fresno in 1981. I spent a lot of time in the county jail because that's the kind of doping I was when I was out there using. I didn't stop for nobody or nothing. I was just obsessed. I'm originally from Salinas, and I know Bobby from meetings. As a matter of fact, I met Bobby when he first came to the program in Salinas, and so we've been friends what about 6 years now or something like that, you know. But when I got to this program, I got here because I had got out of prison, and I didn't want to go back, you know. And it was a little scary for me because that's all I knew. That's all I knew was how to use dope, and I couldn't deal with the kind of feelings I had inside of me. And so I got introduced to that program through the H&I in the women's prison in Frontera. And so like I said, I started coming to meetings about 6 years ago, and it took me three different times of having almost 2 years clean to finally catch on to what this program's about, you know. And like I said, I met Bobby in meetings when he first started coming around, and like I didn't know shit. I still don't really think I know a hell of a lot about sobriety, but thank God I know more than I do 6 years ago, because I remember Bobby used to talk to me, you know, and I would always show up at all the dances, you know. I was always at the dances, and I was always at the happening events, you know. But like as far as the program, a personal program of recovery, I didn't even know what that was about, you know. I didn't know nothing about the steps, you know. The steps were something that were like wall hangings, you know. They weren't like personal to me, or I didn't use them, know about them personally. And I remember Bobby used to tell me, he used to say, you know, why don't you get yourself a sponsor? You know, you really need a sponsor. You need to, like, get involved with the women in the program. And I say, I know. And they say, like, well, then, why don't you, like, come to the dances and, like, come earlier so you can hear the speakers, because you really need to, you know, I really think it would be a good idea for to hear the speakers. And I said, I know. And every time you used to try to help me, you know, every time you used to try to reach out to me and try to tell me something, I would always say, I know, you know. And I remember one time we were at a dance, and he goes, one more time he tried to tell me something, and one more time I said, I know. And then he says, you know what, man, what the fuck? Who do you think you are? The I know queen, you know, because that's what it was like. I knew so much, but I didn't know shit, you know. I really, and so like today, you know, I'm here in Fresno, and I'm really glad to be at this convention. And I love Narcotics Anonymous, and I love the 12 steps. I can live with myself today, with who I am inside of me. You know, it's not so scary anymore to be around people. It's not. I don't like have this. Have this feeling of impending doom like I used to have when I was out there, you know. And I don't have to hide from myself anymore. I don't have to hide from anyone anymore. And it's still kind of scary, you know. It's still kind of scary, but my life is a lot better today than it's ever been before. And I know that the key to freedom for me has been through NA, you know. And I'm going to have a good time at this convention, you know, because this place is real special, and, you know, it's real special, and I love the NA people, and I love you, Bobby. I really love you a lot, you know. It's the truth, and when I come around to conventions, I always get this feeling of well-being, and I get this feeling of I'm loved, you know, it just feels really good today. Thank you.
I just wanted to say one thing. We all love you and keep coming back. Does anyone else want to come up? How about the gentleman in the blue shirt?
Something else. I spoke a little while ago. The red ball tag game. I listen to you people. You know, I listen to people with a lot of sobriety, and I have about almost 9 months sober now, and I listen. Then you're right on the money, Bobby. What you were saying about always trying to figure everything out. You know, I find myself there a lot, and I don't want to figure it out because it gets too complicated, and I can't handle it, and I don't understand, and then things get all mixed up for me, and I lose hope. I lose hope, and I really work on keeping it simple today, and I like listening to the people that have been around for a while, because it gives me hope, because sometimes I wonder if I can keep going or not. It isn't easy all the time. It really isn't easy. You know, here lately I've been working on changing myself. I know I got to change if I want to stay sober, and it's good. It's good because I push myself to change. I think it has something to do with the shortcomings. You know, I've been asking God to remove my shortcomings, and I was waiting for Him to go, but I figured out that it's going to take some action on my part for me. But so I've been working on change, and I've been feeling a lot better about myself. I push myself. I don't let myself get away with my old bad habits. And I always try to put myself in the other person's shoes instead of being so judgmental. I don't want to judge people anymore. I just want to. You see, everybody says, I love you, I love you. I mean, I hear everybody talking, I love you. And sometimes I have the good feeling and sometimes I don't. And all I know is if I keep coming around, I'll have it too. Thank you.
I hate to talk down. I'm Stephen. I'm an addict. I'm glad to see Bobby here too. It seems like the only time I get to see him is at conventions. You know, I enjoy hearing him talk all the time because he always reminds me too how true we get. And you know, I'm one of those people too that always wants to know. Like I have this bad problem with my kid. You know, I'm always telling her, "What part of no don't you understand?" You know, one of those things. And in my recovery, I've learned that sometimes I got to look into things, like the word recovery. What does recovery mean? The other program, this program, they say it's different. They say they're recovered. Okay, I got a hold of a tape, a Narcotics Anonymous, one of the first world convention tapes one time, and listened to it. The man explained it. Okay, they recovered their family, their wife, their this. Okay, in the other program. What we recover is our right to be human and have feelings. Because most of us killed those off. You know, we were like walking dead. We were out there and never grew up. I'm still a 13-year-old child in a 33-year-old man's body, you know. But the thing is, recovery is, you know, is a lifetime process. And it means you get the right to work with your feelings to get it back. And when I see Bobby talk, he talks with his heart. But the thing is, too, I have the feelings that I can always remember my poor old grandmother the way I used to do her when I got into recovery, because his story has got a lot of similarities that I can relate to. And I can remember when I used to go out there and, you know, run and slam and jam and all that stuff, you know, and run out there, and I'd come home and Grandma be there shaking her head, boy, you're in trouble all the time. They try to get me in the church and all that stuff, and it didn't work. Then one day what happened was, you know, I found out people that were in the program, you know, going through different things I had to in my life, and told Grandma, can you give me a $20 bill? Because I've got to go to one of those NA meetings. It costs $20 to go. You know, so I went. Okay, I'm going to tell you where I went. You all know. And next morning, I got home about 4 o'clock in the morning, slept for about 3 hours, was still messed up, got back up and said, Grandma, they're going to really help me, those people are. Could you give me 15? They're cheaper in the daytime, those meetings are. And one of those things, I wish I could make amends to my grandmother for what I done. And I pray to God my best amends today is that I am clean, that I could give her what she dreamed, that, you know, someday I would have feelings and be clean. You know, that her grandchild would be clean and be okay. It would learn how to live life on life's terms. And, you know, no matter what, one of the things I always, you know, my sponsor tells me, and I can tell the last gentleman that was out here, you know, I love each and every one of you, and there ain't nothing you can do about it, so keep coming back.
You're doing man, woman. Let's see, how about the lady in the red blouse with the ribbon in her hair? Come right up!
Hi, I'm Isabel. I'm an alcoholic addict. I was trying to hide. God, I don't know what to say. I haven't been to a meeting for a long time. I've been sick. I have a back problem, and I've been real sick. And I don't know what to say. I'm real glad to be here. It's helped me to realize how much I need, you know, the program and stuff. And I've been isolated a lot, and I. It's mostly because I can't sit down that long, you know, and I've been sick laying down. And I've just been going through a real bad time lately, and I don't want to cry.
All right.
It's just...
Okay.
I've just been really hurting. It's hard to accept that I can't do anything anymore, and I'm laying down in bed a lot. It's hard to, you know, the acceptance of being sick in bed all the time and not being able to do anything. It's real hard to lose your health, you know, and it hasn't been easy for me these days. It's been real hard. I lost my job. She let me go. And that was hard. It's hard not to be around a lot of people. This is really a privilege to be here for me today, you know. because I'm like starved to see people. You know, just been in my bedroom for 2 months now. And I've been going through a real rough time, real angry. Because it's hard to accept, you know, you just, one day you're well and the next day it's all gone, you know, and I've had other stuff happen to me. My mom died. And my sister died. And my mom died of a heart attack. She had a heart attack last May, and then afterwards, she died 6 months later. And then my dad's house burned down, and my sister died inside the house. And, you know, she was burned beyond recognition. And her boyfriend died inside the house, too. And so I've been dealing with a lot of loss and a lot of grief. And it's really helped me, the program, you know, that, knowing what I know today has really helped me deal with it. You know, I've had to let go a lot of days. A lot of days I just cry, feel sorry for myself. And reading, you know, the NA literature and the big book and self-help books have really helped me a lot. It's a lot of praying. Lately I've been mad at God, you know, because all the stuff has happened to me, and you know, I feel like he doesn't care, but I know he does. You know, because I'm grateful that I can walk, you know, I can see, you know, and I can feel, and I can love, you know. But if all I have to do is be patient, you know, until I'm better, you know, and you know, and that day will come, because this program has given me faith, and I didn't have that before. Before, I used to drink for everything that happened to me. And I've had a lot. A lot of things happened to me all my life. A lot of bad things. My ex-husband killed somebody, and I drank over that for 10 years, you know, and because I was afraid for my kids, and because how could I have been married to a person like that, you know, and I made it last 10 years because I couldn't cope with it, and I couldn't deal with it. And I came into the program about 4 years ago, and I only have like 21 months sober. And it took me a long time to understand what you people were trying to tell me, you know, and I could not understand. And I heard, and I heard, and not until I felt like my heart was bleeding inside is when I went to any length, you know, and when somebody told me that I was doing something wrong by controlling or trying to figure it all by myself. Whatever anybody told me to do it, try this way, I did it because my way wasn't working anymore. The pain that I've been going through now is nothing like the pain that I had before when I was drinking, because that pain was of hate, hating myself. And the pain that I have now, you know, it's just as strong, but hating yourself is worse than this kind of pain, you know. And sometimes I feel like I want to die, but I wake up in the morning and I'm still alive, you know. And God gives me the strength, you know, and I've just been going through a lot. When my dad's house burned down, I remember the next morning, you know, my sister was dead, and I was real sick with the flu, and the Red Cross came over, and they gave my dad a voucher and for food and medicine and stuff like that, you know, and so we went and bought groceries, and then the first aid came over, and they told us to go to the Visalia Emergency Aid, and we went and got him some shoes, and he didn't have any shoes, he didn't have a jacket, he didn't have nothing, it was in the winter. It was real heartbreaking, you know, and there's a lot of love out there, and in these rooms, too, and, you know, if it wasn't for this program and everything I've learned here, you know, I'd be out there using. And there's been days that I wanted to use. There was 3 days that I really wanted to use, and I go, boy, if I want to use, I must be in denial. I just pick up and tell myself, no. You know, and I didn't use, but God, there was 3 days that, you know, I thought, you know, and I didn't. I prayed a lot, and you know, I have a lot to be grateful, you know, because I'm proud of myself. I have some dignity now, you know, and that's a lot, you know. That's a lot. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Donald Maddox.
Hello.
I thank God for keeping me clean today, and it's good to be here to Fresno. When I came around here, they used to say a lot of little things, like if it works, don't fix it, and this too shall pass, and all that stuff. And I guess that's what I'm going to say, you know, like a lot of things going on in our lives. It looks like God's against us, but God's not against us, you know, because if you're like me, you used to be a low-down and dirty addict, you know, and, hey, God put me out of that, you know. And we might have things, you know, we might have our bike stop on the way to the convention, or our car get broke. Some things may happen in our life, but we just got to remember God's not against us, you know, and God's on our side. Thank you for that answer.
My name's Burrow. I'm an addict. I just want to say I like this, but, you know, I didn't have no love myself when I grew up. You know, that love from the family. But I got that here. You know, they said, don't pick it up, keep coming back. And that's the only thing I understood. And I just kept coming back. And then I started trusting, you know, I started trusting you people as a whole. And then I started trusting God. And then I started trusting myself. And I still have a hard time trusting people as individuals, you know. But I'm working on it because of the steps. And, you know, I'm glad I'm here, too, today. I just feel fucking good, you know. They talk about, you know, God being present in the room, you know, and when I walked in and sat down, you know, I got real calm once I started hearing the speaker, Bobby sharing, and then the other people, you know, and I could feel myself, you know, getting hooked up, you know. And that's all I wanted to say. I just want to say thank you for being here and, you know, in my life because, like, it's like everybody else. You know, this is the best thing that ever happened to me, coming into this program, you know, and staying here, you know. I came just to get my shit together, and I found a lot more than that. Anyway, thank you.
Hi, my name is Irene. I'm an addict.
Hi.
I'm grateful to be clean and sober and alive today. I just want to share, I just a couple of days ago celebrated my 9th year of clean time, you know? And, man, you know, that's pretty powerful, you know what I mean? Anyway, so, I don't know, you know, this is the first time I've ever had the opportunity to, like, participate in watching this miracle happen with a convention, you know, and it's been really work, you know. First of all, the four personalities, and shut up, don't look at him, you know what I mean? He's crazy. You know what I mean? Man, but it's a growing spot, I'll tell you, you know. But, you know, I'm real grateful for some direction that I've called, you know, and talked to people, and people have been willing to give me some direction and to, like, constantly remember that, you know, higher powers in this heaven and everything's as it should be, you know. And I want to welcome the newcomers, and I stay within hopes that you will see something here, feel something here,
you know, hear something here that'll make you want to come back, you know. Personally, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, don't come to your meeting loaded, you know. Really, I don't care how you get here as long as you get here, you know, because my first sponsor came to Narcotics Anonymous loaded, and they had to detox her here. And if people wouldn't have been willing to do that, I wouldn't be here, you know, and I'm not grateful for that. And I hope you have a good time, and we'll see you later. Bye.
I'm Matt, and I'm an addict alcoholic.
Hi, Matt.
Yeah, it feels grateful to be here, and it feels good to be a part of something today, you know. I mean, I like what Bobby said about running. I've been a runner and an isolator all my life, you know. And it, that fear of people, you know, and not knowing how to deal with it without using drugs, you know. And now to be standing up here in front of you and telling you it's okay, you know. I'm here and I'm clean today. And I don't have to use drugs to be a part of anymore. You know, I'm a part of without it. And it feels good, you know. I'm a newcomer to the program. I have about 14 months. Yeah, and each day is a learning experience for me today. You know, I've had to do a lot of, had to make a lot of major changes in the beginning. You know, they suggested for me to live in a halfway house and give up my apartment where I was living. And I didn't want to do any of that, you know. But that's what I had to do to stay alive today, you know. And I just recently moved back to the town where they told me that I should move away from, you know. And I'm working on cleaning up wreckage of the past today, you know. And I'm not having to get drunk or loaded to do it, you know. I'm able to walk through it with the friends that I've met in the program, with the steps, you know. I'm just grateful to be here today. Thank you.
Well, the time has come. This meeting's almost over. Was there anyone would like a last few minutes to talk? Let's close with the Lord's Prayer, please.